For nearly four decades, Jim LaBarber interviewed the greatest acts of rock and roll on Cincinnati radio, earning him the title as the Music Professor. LaBarber didn't come to WLW to 1969, 3 years after the Beatles played Crosley Field, but he's met them, as well as the four warm-up acts for the Beatles' 66 concert, The Remains, The Circle, Bobby Head, The Ronettes. So let's start with the Beatles. Did you ever get to see them and get to meet them?
Yeah, in 1964, on their first American tour, I was with them in Pittsburgh at the Civic Arena. And as a matter of fact, there's a little bit that you've seen on many Beatles documentaries. I had asked the Beatles, I said, that She Loves You, the Yeah, 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 did you get that from Jerry and the Pacemakers? I like it, I like it. And they all stood up in unison. They stood up, John, Paul, George, and Ringo, and they pointed their finger at me and said, yeah, yeah, yeah. They did the Yeah, Yeah, Yeah from the Beatles. And all these guys, you know, all these people at the press conference and this little get-together started laughing. So, yeah, I was a victim of their joke.
You weren't here in 66, but you're good friends with Steve Kirk.
Right.
Steve Kirk was morning man at SAI, who in 64 was part of the good guys that brought the Beatles here. And then Steve Kirk and Dino Santangelo brought him here in 66. And you've talked to Kirk about that, right?
And it's painful. Steve tells me, that's painful, Jimmy. It's painful to talk about it.
Why is it painful?
Well, originally the contract was for $75,000. They got Brian Epstein and the management team in New York to come down to 60. And now you got to put this into perspective, because 64, they brought the Beatles to Cincinnati for $25,000 with the five disc jockeys chipping in $5,000 each. And then they had part of the gate, so they ended up walking away with $38,000. And if you look at the history of what was going, acts were being paid, in 1965, WSAI's original contract for the Rolling Stones was $5,000. So here we are. He tells the story, Saturday, August the 20th, a beautiful day in Cincinnati, sun shining. But at 5:15, it starts to rain. And Kirk keeps looking at the stage. He's going, man, there's something missing. In the contract, they had to have a tarp covering the stage. Dino Santangelo, on this beautiful day, returned the tarp to save, Kirk, he thinks, about $400 in rental fees. And it's missing. It's gone from the stage. And it was late in the day. The rain's coming down. And they tried to find another tarp to rent, but they couldn't. And that single act broke the contract with the Beatles. And one story was that Mal Evans, one of the Beatles' equipment managers, gets thrown several feet across the stage. He's plugging in to a wet amplifier. Tony Barrow, who I talked to many times over the years, the Beatles PR guy, said that they advised anybody from touching any of the equipment on stage because they could get electrocuted, and the Beatles had no choice. George Harrison said, only gig they ever missed. That was it. So the rain stopped. They could have gone on with the show. Damage is done. If they only would have kept that tarp that Dino took back, the show would have gone on. And the New York reps were furious. Brian Epstein was upset. And they're ready to walk. They're going. The contract's void. And Steve Kirk is begging with them in the offices at Crosley Field, please, got to stay. You got to stay. Do it tomorrow. Do it tomorrow. And it was John Lennon. John Lennon who stepped up and said, okay, guys, he liked Kirk. He had met him again in 65 somewhere. And he remembers how nice the guys at the radio station treated him and the Beatles in 64, and he said, we're going to stay. We're going to do the show. We'll do the show on Sunday. And he said, we'll go on, and it was like 11 o'clock. And he said, well, we'll go on at noon. And Kirk said, no, let's make it 1 o'clock because the kids go to church with their moms and dads. And so it was at 1 o'clock. And thanks to John Lennon and Steve Kirk, that show went on.
But he lost money on it because they had to pay twice for the venue, and they had to pay twice for the cops.
Yeah, more work had to be done. New contracts for the Beatles, new contracts for Crosley Field. Security, that took a long time because they had 125 police officers, off-duty officers. Now those guys aren't signed for Sunday. They've got other jobs, other things to do. They had to find 125 other officers. Well, they paid $60,000 for the Beatles, okay, that's locked in. And then they had the other expenses. And the Kirk story is an interesting story because Early on, the Beatles sold out Cincinnati Gardens.
64,
I mean, this is a
right.
no-brainer in 64. $5,000, that's all he puts up. The Beatles end up coming up with $38,000. I think they paid Dino some money, Dino Santangelo, to promote that show. They come out with just about $5,000 each, maybe a little less than $5,000. Now, a year later,
1965,
they're coming back. The city comes back for the taxes. The IRS, the taxes, they need taxes. Well, Bobby Harper's down in Atlanta, Georgia. Dusty Rhodes is at CKLW in Windsor, Ontario, Canada. And Kirk is at WSAI. So they nail Kirk for the city taxes, and he pays over $4,000. So he actually ends up losing on the Beatles show. Now, this show is $60,000. He told me, reluctantly, he told me that they probably lost between, by the time they were all done with everything, he's told me he lost between $20,000 and $25,000 on that show.
On the 66 show.
On the 66 show, and had to get back in the radio and get a job in radio because he was off of WSAI. He was promoting shows and doing commercials and TV stuff. So he had to go back, and he got on a wing in Dayton, Ohio. But $25,000 in early 66, before I got the job in Cleveland, I was making $100 a week. And, you know, I thought that was pretty good. School teacher's making $4,500 to $4,800, and he's paying $25,000 to the Beatles. He lost. And tickets were way down because, now, before this tour started, there was an article in the March 66 London Evening Standard that nobody paid attention to. It was largely unnoticed in England and in America about the Beatles. They're bigger than Jesus Christ, the story was. John Lennon says this. An American magazine date book puts it on the front page of the August issue. And there's the story. And, of course, protesters were coming out after the Beatles for their supposed Antichrist stance, public burnings of Beatles records. Now, I was on WKYC in Cleveland at this time, and our afternoon guy, Jerry G, was one of the few disc jockeys. Murray the K was another guy on tour with the Beatles. He was over in England, came over, back over when they came over in August for the tour. And so every day when I was doing his show, he'd say, Jimmy, say hi to Ringo. Hi, Jimmy. And then he'd have a Beatle beat report. It was like every hour with the Beatles. So we were really on top of it, and it was a great time to be on the radio. And we had John on the air explaining to us, the Cleveland audience, that it was, you know, he was only commenting on the decline among churchgoers. He made a mistake in using the Beatles following in comparison with that of organized religion. He never meant it as an anti-religious thing. Outcry, though, still to ban the Beatles. And then in Memphis, right before Cincinnati, they had canceled the concert, but then the concert was okay, you can go on. And somebody threw a firecracker on stage. It sounded like a gunfire. And apparently John was there, and everybody thought John got hit. But it was a mess.
So when you met the Beatles in 64, nice chaps?
Oh, yeah. The thing is that I have to say, when I go back to those days in 64, the early times, anybody who told you, hey, I knew they were big stars, nah, there was no way. At that time in 64 now, they were just doing old American rock and roll. And then the little songs that they did, She Loves You and I Want to Hold Your Hand, very simple rock and roll songs. And it was later with the George Martin influence that they were allowed, because of that record sales, to do Rubber Soul and the other things to expand their, you know. And then you had George Martin, who had a great ear, a classically trained ear, and they could use the piccolo trumpet in Penny Lane. And the idea of Paul McCartney doing Yesterday with the cello taking the high part, you know, and the violin, you know, it was just his brilliance with the Beatles.
But in 64, when they played here, they played Rollo Beethoven, a Chuck Berry cover, Long Tall Sally. Yeah. In 66, they played Long Tall Sally again.
Yeah.
And so they paid homage to their rock and roll.
Well, Little Richard, you talked about the Long Tall Sally. Little Richard told me that he was with the Beatles at the Star Club. This was a couple of years before it all broke. Everything was going crazy. But they were still stars over there. And he said he really liked the Beatles. He said, they used to sit at my feet and listen to me. And they looked up to him, and they had offered him a chance to manage them. And he said, no, I didn't want to manage them because they reminded me too much. Their harmonies were too close to my good friends, the Everly Brothers. And that song, Long Tall Sally, Paul literally did a great job of it, imitating Little Richard in that song.
So the four warm-up acts that played before, nobody played on Saturday night because the rain was so bad. The warm-up acts played before the Beatles on Sunday. So it was The Remains, The Circle, Bobby Hebb, and the Ronettes. Let's start with the Ronettes.
Okay, the Ronettes had to be the of those acts. They had to be the headliners. They had Ronnie Spector, who had the greatest rock and roll female voice at the time. Very sultry, but she's not on the tour. Now, John Lennon in 64 wanted the Ronettes to open, but her lover, her husband, eventually Phil Spector, said no, he wouldn't let her go. Matter of fact, she didn't even do the Caravan of Stars tour because Phil wouldn't let her go out of the house. He had, you know, her locked up in this giant 23-room mansion out in California, and she later broke away from him. So
it was Estelle, her sister, and two cousins, I believe, with the Ronettes.
Nedra ended up being the lead singer, and Estelle was with them, and then Elaine, her cousin Elaine. And they did the song, Well, Be My Baby. And this was the female act that, up until that time, the female acts were just kind of singing, you know, like Maybe, and I Met Him on a Sunday, and things like that. But the Ronettes were singing right to the guy, you know, Be My Baby, another song, Baby, I Love You. They were reaching out, and they came on stage with these beehive hairdos, heavy eye makeup, tight skirts, you know. If they were right here in this room with us now, dressed up the way they were, the sprinkle system would go off. We'd be soaking wet. So they had some great songs. Walking in the Rain,
Walking
a great
in the
song.
Rain, right?
Yeah.
And I knew The Circle, like I said, from Red Rubber Ball.
Well, now The Circle was on that tour because that was Brian Epstein's group. That was Brian Epstein's American group. That was the first group that he signed. And they were the Rondells. The kids went to Lafayette College. The Circle was, if you're in Eastern Pennsylvania, there's like a circular roundabout known as the Center Square. And that's where The Circle came in. And then the spelling of that was John Lennon's idea. Circle, C-Y-R-K-L-E.
Lennon's idea, wow.
Yeah, that was John Lennon's idea. But they were discovered really by Brian Epstein, and he changed the name, and then the spelling came from John Lennon. And they were on the dates in America. They had Red Rubber Ball that was a hit, and then they had Turned Down Day. And then they fell into that whatever happened to category. And the Remains were, I don't understand how they're on the tour, to be honest with you, because this is a backup. This was like a cover band. And they all got together. They were another college group. You know, we talked about The Circle hanging out in Eastern Pennsylvania, meeting at Lafayette College. They met at Boston University. They never had a chart record. But they were a great cover band. They could do everybody's music. And if you go to YouTube and listen to them, they're good. They're a very good band. And this was going to be their big, big break. And what happens? Right after the tour is over, they break up.
And then the last was Bobby Head, an R&B singer from Nashville or something?
Yeah, and he had this record, Sonny, that was a giant. I mean, just a monstrous hit. As a matter of fact, when he was on tour with the Beatles, his record was ranked higher on the charts for a time period than the Beatles. So, I mean,
Song Sonny?
Sonny. It was a big, big hit in 1966. And he wrote that song. He had a brother, Harold, who was killed in a knife fight outside of a Nashville nightclub. And he was devastated by that. And that happened a day after President Kennedy was assassinated. So these two events, Bobby Hebb was despondent, and he took to writing music, and he wrote this song. It was an optimistic song. A lot of people thought it was a love song, but with that in mind, the next time you listen to it, it might take on a different meaning. But it was a big record for him.
And he didn't do much of anything else after that either.
No.
And this platform for these bands, the last Beatles, which, of course, we didn't know was the last Beatles tour at the time.
No.
But like 2.5 weeks, they blitzed from coast to coast, a stop here, and then ended up in Dodger Stadium, then Candlestick Park. And you're on the air at the time. Nobody had a clue that we'd never see them tour again.
No, nobody knew that. And they were packing them in and selling out at venues. But of course, here in Cincinnati, this thing right after the John Lennon controversy and the event in Memphis, and then the rain, boy, that's quirky. About $20,000 to $25,000. Can you imagine that? He said, Jimmy, I don't talk to anybody about this. I don't want anyone to talk about it. Don't want to talk about it.
But he's alive and well, living in Florida.
Living in Florida these days, yep. And very happy. He says, I got to go. I'm going to hit the beach. Going to the beach, Jimmy. Going to the beach. But this was also the only time that the Beatles ever did two shows, two different cities in one day. You know, they're off on the plane and they're off to St. Louis Busch Stadium, 341 miles away. And it was interesting, they were talking about the equipment that they had. Now, when I saw them in Pittsburgh, they pulled in with a Ford Econo van that they had, and they had all the equipment in that van. And I was thinking, because when McCartney was here a few years ago, what do you have, like 18 to 20 trailers that were parked all around
the Great American Ballpark?
Great American Ballpark. It was incredible. But they came in with this little Econo van, and that was it. And after the show, George said we had to tear down our equipment, you know, which was the three guitars, the bass guitar, and the drum set, and three amps. And they're off. They're off. That's all they have.
What a magical, magical time in the history of Cincinnati music and rock and roll in general. It was just a fantastic time.
You know, that whole thing about the Beatles, because when you think of the talent that they had, the show they put on here, you know, we were talking about the old rock and roll. They start off with rock and roll music. John Lennon does it. They did, in their act over the years, more Chuck Berry music than any other artist besides their own music.
What I find curious is looking at the song that's from 66 here, is that it was right after Revolver had come out, and yet Eleanor Rigby, A Yellow Submarine, neither were on the set list.
That's amazing, looking back on that and putting it in perspective. And you would have thought they would have been doing that to promote it, you know?
Well, you know, they did I Feel Fine. They did McCartney did Yesterday.
Now, they did that with all four Beatles, you know, rather than just Paul in the studio by himself when he did that. And that's such a great song. When the song was recorded, it was, and then they did it in G major, not in F major, when they did it on stage.
Yesterday, all my troubles seemed so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, I'm not half the man I used to be. There's a shadow hanging over me. Oh, yesterday came suddenly. Why she had to go, I don't know, she wouldn't say. I said something. Yesterday, love was such an easy game to play. I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Why she had to go, I don't know, she wouldn't say. I said something wrong, now I long for yesterday. Yesterday, love was such an easy game to play. I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday.
I guess with the ticket stubs, you brought your ticket stub back, and then they used the black magic marker, and they crossed it off. Yeah. I couldn't understand the ticket prices, and I was talking to Kirk. He didn't seem to remember. It was $475 and $550 for the tickets. But it seemed like the $475 seats weren't bad seats, you know, looking. And they were different colors, all different colors.
Well, the other thing that struck me is we've all been to baseball parks, but if you put the stage out at second base, I mean, that's not intimate to anybody. Yeah. I guess that's so you can get foul pole to foul pole seats sold. But if the stage was way out at second base, I mean, nobody was close.
Yeah.
Well, this has been great fun. Thank you very much for coming in tonight and talking about the Beatles. Like you said, when you met them, you never thought that they were going to be the iconic rock and roll band of the century.
I'll say this, though. They were really coached well. Brian Epstein did a great job because they were so neat. They were so nice to talk to. They were fun. It was a light atmosphere. They were, you know, these guys were, these are four poor guys from a tough section of Liverpool. You know, the Rolling Stones came over like the bad guys. When I was with the Rolling Stones, despicable guys, in 1965, 66. And they were from upper middle class. You know, they were from nice families.
Privileged, yeah.
No, the Beatles were from the ghetto. You know, these guys were rough guys. And he had them so polished. It reminded me, I was with the Supremes when they first went out of Detroit and they had those three number one hits. They were elegant, absolutely elegant. Barry Gordy with his factory there, with the grooming and everything. They were perfect, absolutely beautiful ladies. And Brian Epstein did that with the Beatles. And when Paul McCartney came back to Cincinnati a few years ago and played at the stadium, he reminded me of when I first saw him in 1964. He was cute on stage, doing the little jokes and doing the stuff. It reminded me of when he was a kid doing that rock and roll. And the Beatles, just that charming, that whole thing that they had. Brian Epstein and the Beatles. But my contention was, if they didn't sell those records early on, that the stuff that they did with those first two tours, the Rubber Soul, the other things never would have happened. They would have been just working for the public utility company over in England somewhere, like Pete Best did, working in the bakery shop or something. It never would have happened.
It just would have been a cover band doing Little Richard and Chuck Berry stuff.
Yep, and it just afforded the opportunity, and they put them with George Martin, and that whole story is a wonderful story. So, and that's when it all happened. And he allowed them the opportunity to experiment with I Feel Fine, with the feedback that they said was accident. It wasn't an accident. That was all planned. They did that. They had great ears. They did have great ears. And you think of McCartney, those guys couldn't read a note of music. McCartney could never read a note of music. He later taught himself, I think, a little bit on the piano.
And to the point of the 66 concert, so they go to Frisco, it's the end of it, and then they go back to England, and what was it, Magical Mystery Tour, Sgt. Pepper's, and all this great, great music great that music. They cranked out since, again, given the freedom from what they had as the, of doing the three tours from 64 to 66.
Yeah. It's wonderful. Just absolutely wonderful.
I want to be your lover, baby. I want to be your man. I want to be your lover, baby. I want to be your man. Love you like no other, baby. Like no other can. Love you like no other, baby. Like no other can. I want to be your man. I want to be your man. I want to be your man. Tell me that you love me, baby. Let me understand. Tell me that you love me, baby. I want to be your man. I want to be your lover, baby. I want to be your man. I want to be your lover, baby. I want to be your man. 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 I wanna be your man.
Among the thousands of teenagers cheering the Beatles at Crosley Field in 1966 were Bev Oldhouse and Tom Sandman. They sat through the soaking rain on Saturday night and returned to Crosley Field the next morning to see the postponed concert. Let me start with you, Bev. What do you remember about that day?
The most important thing that I remember, actually, is that Saturday night, I was kind of in my room feeling a little blue because I did not have a ticket to see the Beatles. And that was very disappointing. So I was just listening to WSAI, all the updates on what was going on with the Beatles. And about 8 p.m. that night, the phone rang. It was my girlfriend's father. And he said, if you can get ready in 3 minutes, I will give you a ticket and I will take you down to see the Beatles. What happened was he had taken his daughter, Debbie, down and their cousin, Nancy. Nancy got sick while she was in line to see the Beatles, and she had to come home. And she had asked Debbie, do you know anyone that just loves the Beatles that you think would love to have a ticket? And Debbie said, yes, Beverly Oldhouse. Her dad picked me up and took me down there, and I just could not believe it. It was just like a dream come true. It was raining as we came into the stadium a little bit, and then when we got to our seats, it poured. And my recollection is it poured for 2 hours.
I remember a really long rainstorm, and that's all I remember from that night. We had to go home.
So you sat in the rain, or did everybody go back under the stands? What?
I don't remember that day. I remember the next day at the concert. I remember everything about it. I remember it was so weird to go to an event that wasn't a baseball game at Crosley Field. I remember that the people that I knew that went to the show at Cincinnati Gardens couldn't hear a thing. They said it was all screams. So they had these big baffle speakers along the first and the third base side. And I remember hearing the singing. I could hear the instruments. Now, it was screaming for sure, but I thought it was a pretty good concert. And it was very exciting because they had, I didn't know who the Remains were, but the Ronettes were pretty good. The Circle had some hits on.
Red Rubber Ball.
And the guy that had, I didn't know this at the time, but he had the number one hit in the USA, Bobby Hebb. He was the act right before the Beatles.
With Sonny.
A huge hit. So I thought it was great. It was so exciting. I mean, I was 13. It was my first rock concert. But the term rock concert didn't mean anything back then. We didn't have rock concerts. We went to a rock show. What the heck is a rock band? You know, and now in retrospect, wow. That was one of probably the first outdoor rock concert in Cincinnati history, right?
I believe so.
Bev, you were there. Could you hear the concert?
Yes,
I could
hear the concert. And in between the songs, one of the Beatles would talk. And I heard that too. So that was, you know, very fortunate. Going back to Saturday during the rainout at the very end, I remember them announcing that there was condensation in the instruments and that the Beatles could get electrocuted, and so it would have to be canceled. Well, at that point, a lot of people near me threw away their ticket.
Oh, my gosh.
Could not believe it. And then they announced it was going to be rescheduled for noon tomorrow, and they go, oh, no. So,
and you needed your ticket.
You needed your ticket, absolutely.
Now, you guys are such Beatle fans. 50 years later, you each have your tickets.
Yes.
It's a torn ticket,
mm-hmm.
and then there's a black marker on it.
Right.
And that is how you got back in? They swiped it with a black marker, right? Is
that's that it. Black magic marker. Only the...
Pretty simplistic.
Really. On the cutting edge of technology in 1966.
Yes.
Bev, I love it. Not only do you have the Beatles ticket, but you've got it in an envelope that says Schuller's Wig.
Well, this is the original envelope that the tickets for Cincinnati Gardens came in.
So you were at the 64 concert.
I was also, only because of the generosity of my Aunt Mary. Once again, I did not have the means. And my birthday's not until November, but my Aunt Mary said that she would buy me a Beatles ticket along with her daughter so we could both go together. And they were $5.50 a piece, so she wrote out a check to the Beatles for $11, Mrs. John Castleman.
And is it canceled on the back by the Beatles?
Yes,
oh
canceled on
gosh.
The back by the Beatles.
Payable to the Beatles, the Central I love it. So yes. You were at the 64 concert.
I was.
Did you hear anything?
I heard a little, but mostly it was the screaming. And it was, I would say it was 115 degrees. It was. And everybody was standing up on their chairs, and it was kind of chaotic, but still extremely exciting. I'm so glad, and I'm so blessed that I've been able to go to both concerts.
I was told that, yes, the gardens had no AC.
No.
And it was like 115 degrees, and yet a friend of mine said, well, we all got our hair done, and we all looked great for about 2 minutes. So since you saw both, any contrast between their performance or the experience or what you saw in 64 and then when you saw them again in 66?
Well, I guess the first time you see almost anyone, it is super exciting because it is your first time. Unfortunately, you just could not hear a lot. So there were a lot of flashbulbs going off, a lot of screaming, a lot of sweating. But still, nonetheless, it was a fantastic experience. What I remember about them at Crosley Field is that the stadium was not crowded at all. A lot of empty seats, unfortunately. And I also remember I've never been at a place that had so many policemen. That was kind of incredible to me that they needed to have, you know, that much security. All the policemen were in the white long sleeve shirts and, you know, sweating. And I remember distinctly that the ones that were near my seat all had cotton in their ears. Now, I wasn't sure if the cotton was because of the girls screaming or the Beatles' music was not to their liking or both.
I've seen photos. They were kind of lined up along the edge of the stands facing the crowd.
Yes.
Almost shoulder to shoulder. And in terms of the expense of the concert.
God, wouldn't you love to have had the cotton concession that day? That would have been great. You know, made $1 million. What I remember was in between the songs, George would wave at the crowd and mm-hmm. then everybody would scream. And I also remember that you really couldn't see them very well because they were in the shade under the tarp. But John would stand out on the edge of the stage right in the sunlight, and you could see him very clearly. I think he opened the show with rock and roll music, and
yes.
and then they were off.
And Paul closed it with Long Tall Sally.
So they opened with Chuck Berry.
Yes.
And they ended with Little Richard. That's pretty
cool. That's right. That is pretty
cool. That's pretty cool.
And the pictures, they look pretty dapper in what
the pinstripe suits. Mm-hmm,
Brian Epstein did not mess around. He had them well-mannered and well-manicured. They were always in great suits.
Bev, you mentioned that there wasn't a real big crowd, and it's been placed between 10 to 15,000. Either you want to guess how many made it there on Sunday when they finally did it?
I think 10 to 15,000 is a pretty good guess. There was nobody in the bleachers.
No.
Absolutely empty. Another thing I remember was behind home plate, there was a sign that said, "Long live Bernard Webb." And I thought, who in the hell is Bernard Webb? So I subsequently found out that was Paul's pseudonym for the song Woman. He wrote the song Woman for Peter and Gordon, and he put the name Bernard Webb as the songwriter, and somebody caught on to that, and they put that up there.
Your dad worked for the city, did he not?
Yeah, he was, let's see, at the time, he was the safety director.
Was he involved then?
No.
Did there have to be safety at the Beatles concert?
Well, I'm sure that he had something to do with the police detail, but, you know, there was a police chief that took care of that. But he brought me to the show.
Did he really?
Yes. My brother was supposed to go, but he couldn't make it because he had a baseball game that day. So we both went to Crosley on Saturday. My brother Joe couldn't make it. He had a baseball game, and he says that was the worst decision I ever made in my life, was to play that stupid knothole baseball game instead of going to the Beatles concert.
The Beatles always have to trump baseball.
Well, see, at Crosley, you had the combination, the perfect combination.
Well, that's true.
Another thing in retrospect that I really think is amazing was here they were in concert in August 66, and they had just released an album, Revolver.
Revolver.
They didn't do one song off of that album.
Revolver would have been Eleanor Rigby.
Yellow Submarine, and they were starting to get more technically progressive in the studio, and they were doing songs that, frankly, they couldn't do on stage anymore, with sitars and backwards mm-hmm. guitars and things like that. But I just thought that's amazing. They did a national tour, and they didn't sing one song off their new album. I mean, some promo guy somewhere is pulling out his hair mm-hmm. with that notion.
Eleanor Rigby picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong? Father Mackenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near. Look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? All the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people. Where do they all belong?
Well, I'm looking at the rundown. They opened, as you said, with Chuck Berry, rock and roll music, and then came She's a Woman and I Need Someone, Day Tripper.
Yeah, If I Needed Someone was the George song. So that was George's solo. And that was on the Yesterday and Today album, and that had also been released recently in the U.S. And Day Tripper was a big single, and Babies in Black was actually about a year old from the Beatles' 65 album. So I Feel Fine was a single. Yesterday was Paul's big number, and that's a very interesting song to hear in concert with no strings. He pulls it off. It's definitely a Paul song.
Did the others sing and harmonize with it? Could you recall?
No, not on Yesterday. Mm. It was just Paul. And then Ringo got to sing I Want to Be Your Man. Ringo always had one song. And then John's
Which
song,
should have been Yellow Submarine if they would have been plugging the new album.
Well, they had no brass. I mean, I guess they could have brought the band in from the Findlay Market Parade. Now, see, think about that. Think about that. You know, in retrospect, it all makes sense. But they were just making it up as they went along.
Well, I'm glad you're talking about this because I looked at this playlist and I thought, boy, if I had a choice of the two concerts, I would like to hear the songs played in 64.
Well, Babies in Black is a great song, John.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there's definitely some hit singles. Nowhere Man was a hit single.
He's a real nowhere man, sitting in his nowhere land, making all his nowhere plans for nobody. Doesn't have a point of view, knows not where he's going to. Isn't he a bit like you and me? Nowhere man, please listen. You don't know what you're missing. Nowhere man, the world is at your command.
So I think that's a pretty good selection. What gets me is there's only 11 songs. They were only on stage for about a half an hour. You had a 2.5-hour show when you edit everybody together. But man, I'm telling you, can you imagine?
I think Beatlemania was just so big at that time. It didn't matter. You got to see them on stage. You got to hear a little bit of their singing. And it was fantastic.
Well, it's also, I think, indicative of what shows were like back then. They didn't have rock concerts. They had reviews. So even in the 50s and early 60s, it was a rock and roll review with so many songs by the Righteous Brothers and so many songs by the Ronettes and so many songs. And you didn't really do a, quote, full set. Your full set was about a half an hour.
So the last song was Long Tall Sally.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Did they just say, thank you, Cincinnati, and disappeared? Was there cheers for an encore? Did they do more?
No encore. That was like, we're out of here. Goodbye. I mean, seriously, we were lucky to see that show. If it weren't for John Lennon saying, okay, we'll stay over for a night and come back on Sunday, we wouldn't have seen him at all in Crossley Field. So very lucky.
My recollection was they got into a car and they had white towels and they waved the white towels as they were leaving.
Drove to the center field wall and then got out and got in, I think, another car.
Yeah, so they did not do an encore in 64 at the Gardens, and they did not do an encore at Crosley Field. So.
Well, understandably, for the Crosley Field concert, they had another gig already to do in St. Louis.
That day.
That night.
That day, yeah.
Do you recall when the show was over? I mean, was it just wildly cheering and everybody just said, okay, it's over, we left? What, anything about how?
I think one of the DJs came on from SAI and said, thanks for coming, drive safely, and I don't know who it was.
It might have been Steve Kirk. Steve Kirk apparently has said he was the only guy that ever took the stage on Saturday. So when you talk to people today, 50 years later, and you say, I saw the Beatles, what do you tell them?
I tell them it was magical. I tell them that I still feel like they were the greatest rock and roll band ever. I tell them that I was blessed to see them twice. And I really don't think there'll be anybody, any foursome quite like them again in my lifetime.
I say that I was very lucky, luckiest guy in the world. My first rock concert was the Beatles at Crosley Field. You know, I've always wondered when I was younger and you'd see, you know, my parents listening to Glenn Miller and it's like, what is it about it? Why do they love this guy so much? And now I get it, because now when I listen to a Beatle record, a little part of me is 13 again. It puts you back there and makes you feel happy in a way that just a visual or maybe a reading just doesn't do for you. And there's something about music from the era where you grew up that is really something special. So
it touches your heart in a very special way. It's so nostalgic. And when you have friends, you know, around the same age, you talk about those days and what you were doing when you heard Twist and Shout or I Want to Hold Your Hand. My mom, when I wanted to go to the Beatles concert, she says, it's a waste of money. Well, fast forward 10 years, my mother was converted to the Beatles.
There you go. See?
So,
it took a while, but
yes.
Yeah, that's great. Now, I think, I don't know if this is true, but I think that the only person, sports or music, to have performed at Crosley Field and Riverfront Stadium and Great American Ballpark may have been Paul McCartney.
You could actually say he played Crosley Field.
He played Crosley Field, or played at Crosley Field.
One more question. So we're there in the Beatles' euphoria of 1966 and saw the concert. I mean, there was no clue, no indication that in 10 days they'd never do another public tour, another public concert.
No. In fact, there were news reports that said they're finished. They'll never get together again. John's doing a movie and Paul's doing a movie soundtrack and George is learning the sitar. And it was like, it's over. And then less than a year later, they came out with Sgt. Pepper and it just blew everybody's mind. And to think that here in August 66, we're watching the Beatles sing Chuck Berry and Little Richard. And a year later, Sgt. Pepper comes out, EBN goes on the air, everybody's got long hair, everybody's smoking things that aren't tobacco. And it's like, it was an unbelievable change in music. And so many people in the counterculture went along for the ride and followed the Beatles in that direction.
And it's understandable with Sgt. Pepper's and Magical Mystery Tour. You couldn't do an album tour, you know, because it was such a studio project.
Right. You would think that a band that was so into commerciality wouldn't find acceptance with the counterculture, but the Beatles were immune to all that. They just thought they were the hippest, coolest guys in the world. Maybe it's because they did go on tour and didn't do any songs from their new album. I mean, they did break a lot of rules along the way.
Well, actually, when they played Shea Stadium in New York, there was a CBS TV track or a reporter there complaining that
the bloom is off the Beatles. And what happened was instead of selling 56,000 seats like they did in 1965, they only sold 50,000 seats. What an embarrassment.
Well, it looks like the bloom is off the Beatles. Last year, not an empty seat in Shea Stadium. This year, thousands, perhaps 15 or 20,000 empty seats in this arena that holds 56,000.
Bev, you still have your tickets.
I have my ticket stubs from Cincinnati Gardens in 64 and Crosley Field in 66. They both cost $5.50. I have the original envelope
from the Gardens,
from Cincinnati Gardens, that the tickets were sent in.
Tom, you've got your original ticket too. You've got your Dusty Rhodes Beatle Boosters card, Beatle number 14677, 14,677, with Dusty's picture down the corner. It says Dusty, Chief Beetle Bug.
And just to show you that Dusty was a good promoter, on the back of the card is the Capitol logo. So somebody...
they helped pay for it.
Somebody got the record company to pay for it. So that's a nice promotional item.
So, and you've got your ticket too.
I've got tickets and I have little...
black and white brownie.
Black and white
brownie.
Shots that I took on my Kodak Browning camera. And they're terrible shots, but here on the radio, they're beautiful. They're great close-ups. They're in color. You can see John. You can see Paul.
I can attest to that.
So you were in section 129?
I was on the third base side, yes.
Okay, and Bev, you were on?
Let's see. Box 307, tier 2, seat 8, lower box.
You'll have to go home and get your Crosley Field seat map from 1970. Keys, and you can find out.
And do you also have notes that you made?
I do.
So you went home and typed notes of
them? Well, what I did is, see, I was not planning on going to the Beatles concert because I did not have a ticket. So I was having just a little bit of a pity party for me. And while I was in my room listening to WSAI about the Beatles show, and so I just wrote down some of my notes, and I was just trying to make myself feel a little better listening to SAI and thinking that Cincinnati is really lucky to have the Beatles come here again. And then when my luck changed and fate intervened and I was given a chance to go, then I typed a note about my experience there and what I wore. And this time I had more than 3 minutes to dress. The last time I only had 3 minutes. I haven't done that since in my whole life. But anyway, yes.
And that's the closest you can get to a Facebook post in 1966.
Isn't that the truth?
Putting it on paper.
Yes.
Getting it all out. Absolutely.
I remember after the concert was canceled on Saturday night, of course, no one had cell phones, and we had a very difficult time trying to find...
a payphone?
Yeah, it was hard to find a payphone because the lines were so long, but also then to find Debbie Dad's car, you know, it was quite chaotic and a little frightening, actually. But anyway.
So then you saw the Beatles at age 14?
Yes.
Was that your first concert?
That was my very first concert. It was all worth it.
Would you be willing to read something of your notes? Or...
okay. The title is I Don't Believe It, It Can't Be True. At precisely 8 o'clock Saturday, August the 20th, 1966, I was listening to WSAI reporting on the big Beatles show scheduled for that night. Every time I thought that they would be here at Crosley Field and I wouldn't see them, well, it kind of made me sick. Just as I was feeling sorry for myself, the telephone rang. Hello, Beverly. This is Mr. Sherman. Would you like to see the Beatles? I could not believe my ears. I thought it was a joke at first, but as I found out later, he was serious. Frantically, I hollered down to my mom and asked if I could go. She said, I don't care, just go on. I had 3 minutes to get dressed and ready to go. I don't know how I did it, but I did it. I grabbed my pink sailor dress, beige flats, combed my hair behind my ears in 6 seconds, took a white purse, dropped some money in it just in case, and I was off. As the story goes, Debbie Sherman and her cousin Nancy were down at Crosley Field waiting for the show, but Nancy unfortunately got sick. She thought it was a shame to waste such a good ticket, so she asked Debbie who she should give it to. That's when Debbie thought of me. Well, we got down to Crosley through Portal 7 and got in our seats, and we were in the fourth row back from the fence in the lower box seats. And that's precisely when the rain came. And it came, and it came, and it came. For 2 hours, we sat in pouring rain, drenched through and through. We moved under the roof, and then we met Mary McAtee and Debbie Zeiser at the telephone booth. They said they were sitting by two vacant seats in front of them, so we sat there, protected for a time. 3 minutes later, a WSAI DJ announced that there was condensation in the instruments from the rain, and it would be possible that the Beatles might be electrocuted. Therefore, the concert was canceled, but it was going to be held at noon the next day, on Sunday. Right then, I felt a little sick. Nancy might feel better. And then, well, some people threw their stubs away, and so people started hunting on the ground, but in vain. It took us a long, long time to make contact with Debbie's father's car. Although many people were drenched to the bone, no one really complained. Spirits weren't dampened one bit. And then just goes on to Sunday. We all went to 8:30 Mass just in case I could get to see the Beatles. At 9:30, Debbie called. It's a green light. Everything go. This time it took me a lot longer to get dressed, but we played it safe and donned casual clothes and a pair of binoculars and, of course, a raincoat just in case. There were a lot of false alarms that the Beatles were up in the deserted bleachers watching the crowds, although I still say I saw someone who looked like Paul. The Remains were featured first. They were good guitar players. The man who sang Sonny, Bobby Hebb, was there, and also The Circle. The Circle is one of the very best groups around today. They're just super. Red Rubber Ball and Turn Down Day. Ronettes were also there. Then they came. Being not too far from the exit place, I actually saw them very close up. Need I mention the screams and the flashbulbs? Paul stood on our side in full view. They all wore gray and white striped suits. They looked happy and handsome. The first song was sung by John, Rock and Roll Music. After each song, each of the Beatles spoke. The crowd quieted miraculously. Among the songs, She's a Woman, If I Need Somebody, Yesterday, I Want to Be Your Man, Babies in Black, Paperback Writer, Nowhere Man, Day Tripper, and finally Long Tall Sally. Paul always sings that. Need I say they were great? Every time Paul turned to our section, we waved, and so did he. George did that too. Ringo was hidden, unfortunately, by the amplifiers mostly, but he did look cute. There was screaming, but not deafening. I heard them very well. Most of the policemen, it looked like just 50 on our side, had cotton in their ears. There was a hysterical girl screaming, "Oh, Paul." When Long Tall Sally was finished, they said goodbye. They got in a car to the door on the right side of the scoreboard, waved white towels, and disappeared. Before the Beatles left, at the end, a girl three rows in front of us jumped the fence and headed for the Beatles. She dodged two policemen but was finally caught. I cried a little when they left, only for a few minutes, but when you think you will never see them again. Just one last thing for me. I have tickets for the July 10th Paul McCartney concert. I'm going with my cousin Sylvia, who I went to the first concert at Cincinnati Gardens with. So this is our nostalgic tour, and we're doing this as a tribute to Paul and singing and writing the songs of our life. He's added so much happiness, so much joy, that this is our way to repay him buying a quite expensive ticket. But well worth it. So we are really looking forward to it. And my sisters, Diane and Darlene, are going also.
Great. Excellent.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much for joining us. This has been wonderful.
Thanks for taking us down memory lane, John.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Great for us. And I think it's wonderful to think that, I guess, George and John probably had enough of touring, but Paul and Ringo are both still on the road. And they're both doing Cincinnati concerts in the summer of 2016. So that's pretty cool.
I could not be doing that at 66, let alone 74. So I give Paul all the credit in the world.
And Ringo's got to be 76,
yeah,
right?
I'm not sure how old Ringo is.
He's got 2 years on Paul. He was the oldest of the Beatles.
So is he really?
He was born in 1940.
Okay.
So, yes, older than John. Yeah, amazing. And
it
he's a drummer.
Amazing.
He's a drummer.
I know. So, the energy that they have, I wish I could bottle it.
Yeah, if you listen to some of those early recordings, he is so muscular on those drums. You really have to have a lot of energy and stamina to do the drums and play the drums that way. He's really something.
Mm-hmm.
So
maybe that's why they only played a half hour.
I can see them negotiating now. Okay, bring in the air conditioning and we'll do 45 minutes.
You've been listening to the backstory of the Beatles concert at Crosley Field 50 years ago on Sunday, August 21st, 1966. I'm John Kieswetter, and I'd like you to join me on Sunday, August 21st from 9:30 to noon for a free WVXU celebration at Crosley Field in the Blue Ash Sports Center in honor of the Beatles concert. A number of folks you heard in the past 2 hours will be present. You'll hear songs from the concert. And it'd be fun if you'd like to share your Beatles memorabilia with other fans who will be there and take a selfie with Paul McCartney and John Lennon in front of the iconic Crosley Field scoreboard. There are also other Beatles celebrations in honor of the 50th anniversary of the concert at Crosley Field. The Cincinnati Reds have a special Beatles-themed package at the ballpark on Friday, August 19th, offering a limited edition Crosley Field and Beatles fleece blanket. The fireworks after the game will be to the Beatles soundtrack. And the Haymarket Riot will honor the Beatles with a concert of Beatles music at the York Street Cafe in Newport, Kentucky, on Saturday, August 27th. You'll find links to these events at wvxu.org. Technical support for this Beatles Crosley Field special came from Stephen Baum, Andy Baldeman, and Dave Shermer, and the producer was Lee Hay. I'm John Kieswetter. Thanks for listening, and I hope to see you at Blue Ash's Crosley Field on Sunday, August 21st.